everyone. There's only so much time in the day. That's why we edited this Vermont Edition podcast for brevity. I know you'll thank us.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Remember when you could join the National Do Not Call list, and for a few blissful years, it seemed like we could all be free from unwanted solicitations at dinner time? Well, the cell phone revolution has not just changed the way we interact by phone, it has also changed the way scammers, solicitors, and marketers reach out to us. And lately, there's been a significant increase in the number of robocalls people in Vermont are receiving. Here are just a few examples of robocalls that have come to Vermont numbers just this month. These calls were flagged by users of UMail, a company that tracks robocall data and also offers services to block unwanted calls.
It appears that you are now eligible for interest rates as low as 6.9%. However, this offer is about to expire. Press 1 now.
Kindly call back at the earliest possible on our number before we begin with the legal proceedings. That is 80227.
To receive a medical-grade pain receiving brace with no charge to you. If you are suffering from any type of chronic pain and want a solution, press 1 now.
In order to suspend your socials on immediate basis, we have found suspicious and fraudulent activities associated with your social. To get more information about your case, please call immediately on our department number, 802-866.
Hello, this is the Hope and Prayer Center Ministry, calling today to see if you need urgent prayer. If you would like to have someone from our center pray for you, please press 1. If you would like to no longer hear from us, please press 3.
Okay, option 3, but what happens if I actually press 3? And why are we getting so many of these calls lately? Today on Vermont Edition, we are going to talk about robocalls, both the flood of them and also the dangers. Some appear to come from numbers you recognize. Some tell you that you're going to be in legal trouble if you don't respond immediately. We're going to talk to a cybersecurity expert who's looked into these in a few minutes and what you might be able to do. But first, let's talk with Crystal Baldwin, Program Director at the Consumer Assistance Program. That's a partnership with UVM and the Attorney General's Office. They track the most common scams in the state each year, and they're almost always through robocalls or other unsolicited calls. They also educate Vermonters and businesses on ways to respond if they get these calls. Crystal Baldwin, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
So Vermonters are getting 4.5 million of these calls each month, which breaks down to about 7 calls per person in the state per month. And the volume has doubled in the last 2 years. Why are we getting so many of these calls?
I think the simple answer to that question is they're successful. So if you were a scammer and you were able to either get someone's personal information or money in a call, you're going to keep doing it. And then it's fairly cheap for them to do it as well with the latest technology, which sounds like you'll talk about later.
And how are we defining robocalls? Do they have to have a pre-recorded voice? Do they ever have a live person? I mean, what do we mean when we say 4.5 million robocalls?
So they can be automated calls specifically. So sometimes they will come across as a live caller, but it's just that the call is automated in the beginning. So the scammer inputted a bunch of numbers into their system, called them, and then usually what happens is once somebody answers, they are the ones who receive the live caller, usually whoever answers first.
Mm.
Although it can be automated too, so those computer calls that people are used to receiving where it sounds like a computer that you're talking to.
Well, the ones that are so frustrating too are the ones that say, hello. And then wait for you to respond, and then they respond, and you realize, oh, this is a recording. This is not a real person. So frustrating. You know, a lot of people are expressing frustration, as you might imagine, Crystal. We've been putting the call out to people saying, are you getting these? You know, how do they come in, and what are you experiencing? Scott wrote in to say, they keep calling me even after I joined the Do Not Call lists. So many calls. I don't want a free medical brace. I don't want to work for Amazon. Jerry says, endless calls I never answer. Some are on my block list and they're disconnected right away. It's not right that you pay for phone service and you don't answer your phone because of these calls. Haley says they are endless and they're using numbers the caller ID system has attached to real people or organizations. So you think you're picking up a call from the local doctor's office or something legitimate. Robin says our cell phones occasionally get robocalls. The landline is another story. Several calls a day, all from 802 numbers. Very disruptive. And Marilee says, I left Vermont nearly a decade ago, but kept my phone number. I get about 10 spam calls a day, most days from 802 numbers. It is so frustrating. Crystal Baldwin, not surprising to you, I imagine, to hear those people sharing their experiences and their frustration.
Oh, yes. And just the first one you had mentioned had frustrations regarding the Do Not Call registry. One thing I want to point out is the Do Not Call registry is essentially a list that telemarketers are supposed to adhere to. So it's not a blocking service. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people assume that that is what they're signing up for, but it is simply a list that solicitors who will plan to call people would have to go and check prior to calling and then make sure they don't call anyone on the list. So scammers, they're ignoring the list. And in the illegal nature of a scam call, they're not following the law. So that's kind of an important thing to look out for. And then also, being on the Do Not Call can help people to flag calls as scams. So if you're on the Do Not Call registry and you're receiving a solicitation call, you know, generally, you're not supposed to be receiving solicitation calls. So that can help you identify when you receive a solicitation, that's a scam because I'm on the Do Not Call registry.
Hmm. And you say that's a scam. So what's the difference between scam and spam and solicitation and people who are actually trying to get money from you that you know, is illegitimate? How do these break down?
Well, typically when we look at scams, it's specific related to fraud. So their intent is to get your personal information or your payment for their own gain without actually offering you anything in return. So our most common scam is the IRS scam, and it's been the top scam for many years now. Basically, it claims that you owe back taxes and you have to pay right away. Well, it's a scam call, so if somebody were to actually pay in response to that call, they're not getting anything in return. They're just losing their money. I also want to mention that we released our top 10 scams just this past January for 2018. And of the top 10, 9 of them are phone-centered calls. So they generated through a phone scam, people receiving a call. So the IRS scam, Social Security number phishing scam, computer tech support, those are all like the two-thirds of our pie, and they're all phone-generated scams.
And the other one is what, an email scam?
Yeah, the one that is not a phone scam was an email scam. It's the email extortion scam.
Which is also fairly popular.
Yes, we have received reports of that. We issued an alert about it because we received a number of reports last year.
So for people who are, and we're going to get into some technology and some solutions or, you know, ways that you can try to address this in terms of not getting as many calls. But in terms of if you pick up a call, how can you be sure when something is illegitimate versus legitimate? Because I think a lot of people, you don't want to hang up on the IRS if you really have a problem that's going to result in, you know, something legal happening to you. And you know, so can you give people some tips for how to identify and, you know, can you always hang up because anybody legitimate will get in touch with you in another way? Or are there times that you need to pay more attention?
Right. Well, first I want to advise that anyone can be scammed at any time. There's this kind of common belief that, you know, we're so smart, we're not going to be scammed. But the truth is any of us can be vulnerable at any specific point in time. So first, holding the belief that you can be scammed is really important in dealing with these phone calls. The second is watch out for unsolicited communications. So in the example of the IRS scam, if you've never, ever received a notice in the mail that you have back taxes, but suddenly you're getting calls about back taxes, that should raise a flag that this is an unsolicited communication. Maybe you should do more research. And so the other thing to be aware of as well is a call that demands immediate and urgent response. So usually with the scam calls that are successful, they're requiring people follow-up in the moment to the point where they actually demand that you stay on the phone with them until you complete the process of sending money, for example. So be especially aware of demands for urgent response. And then always know that you can take steps to verify the information. And so we encourage that with anything, even with a call that you receive a solicitation, you might be interested, maybe it's a charity and you're interested in giving money, you can always request verification. So inform them you'd like them to send them a mailing about it or an email about it so that you can then pause, take a moment, and review the information in front of you.
But do you want to be giving out your email or your snail mail address to somebody who you're not sure is legitimate?
Well, that's always a good question as well. But an email is probably less concerning. And always when you're checking email, you still want to be wise about the emails that you're receiving. And
don't open attachments.
Don't open attachments. That's right.
So we're getting, other people say, Bob, on our Facebook page says these are endless every day, 6 to 10 calls that either hang up immediately or are automatons yammering on about car warranties or some such nonsense. Our landline and cell phones both. I had to get rid of the landline extension in my workspace because it was too distracting. Another case of tech ruining daily life. Janet gets 5 or 6 robocalls a day and says, I've even had people call me to ask if I had called them because apparently they've used my number to try to get people to answer. And Nancy says it does no good to block a number. They just have another number the next day. Now, Marilyn in Shaftesbury Center says, we get daily unwanted calls on both our landline and my cell phone. This is the number one problem we have. Why isn't someone like the feds doing something about it? Crystal Baldwin, what is the state of Vermont doing about it?
Right. I certainly just want to take a moment and say I share the frustration. Most of what we all can do is be aware of the scam so that we together can share that information with our friends and loved ones to stop the scams. Not engaging is the best way to stop them at this time. Certainly, you can look at different areas of legislation. I know the Attorney General's office recently urged the Congress to take action against robocalls through the TRACED Act, basically a call identification system to help curb the illegal robocalls. We would encourage as well, if you have ideas, share them. A few years ago, we did a research project on call blocking technology for landline phones. There are these devices you can attach to phones, and then for landlines, you can then identify calls you want to block as they come in. And people have reported that they felt more safe in just having the devices in their homes. But we're battling technology here, so we really want to kind of bind together and come up with a good solution. And we're listening. We would love to hear more about what other people have as recommendations.
That's Crystal Baldwin, Program Director at the Consumer Assistance Program. And we'll put a link up at vpr.net. You can click on today's Vermont edition for more information. Crystal, thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
We're talking about the prevalence of robocalls today. We put the word out about this show on Facebook over the weekend and the floodgates opened. You have certainly been getting a lot of robocalls, and not surprisingly, because Vermonters are getting about 4.5 million of them every month. People like Carrie in Middlebury, who says, I'm a professional, so my number needs to be public. If you call it, my message says, due to the high volume of spam calls, I won't pick up if you're not in my contacts. Leave a message and I'll call you right back. Otherwise, Carrie says, I was answering more calls from robots than from actual clients. Mark on Facebook says, I had my number ported to another carrier about 7 years ago. I still get tons of calls coming to me from the old network. They all have the same 3-digit prefix as my own number, oftentimes with an 802 area code. The National Do Not Call Registry is a joke. And let's turn now to Mish Kabay, professor of computer security and information systems at Norwich University. He has looked at the regulatory, legal, and technological issues around robocalls and the ways we can leverage technology to avoid or reduce them coming to our phones. Mish, it's nice to have you back on the program.
Hello, Jane.
So, not surprising to you then to hear so much frustration from listeners sharing their experiences with robocalls, is it? I mean, this sounds like something that we're all affected by.
Yep. We are We are being flooded. We're being flooded by calls placed basically by criminals. And the technological problem is that they are changing the apparent number called the caller ID all the time. That makes it very difficult to establish call blocking. You can understand that if a criminal used the same number, well, you could stop it. And there are apps, as we call them. There are programs that run on smartphones for Android and for iOS phones, and you can find that information easily. But the problem is that the numbers keep changing. I have been using for some years a little app on my Android phone called Should I Answer? And it's very nice, and it's a great crowdsourcing where whenever we get called by a fake or criminal caller, we can log that and let other people who use the app know that it's fake or it's bad. But of course, the numbers change. And your previous commentator and the headlines that you read are absolutely correct. We even have cases where the criminals are what we call spoofing using legitimate, ordinary, innocent people's phone numbers. Now, that makes it very difficult from a technological standpoint, and I think many of us are responding the way the professional does by leaving a phone message that says, I will not pick up this phone number, this phone, unless I recognize the number. And even that could be fake.
Right. Understand? I mean, if you recognize the number, yes, but they're spoofing that's the right numbers you recognize, that's getting around that solution, isn't
that's
it?
That's right. The only thing I have been able to think of, and I haven't seen it written down, although I do see some evidence that the FCC has been talking in general terms about improving the detection of spoofed calls. But the straightforward solution that I can think of is a double-barreled check. The first is relatively easy. It means that the phone system would automatically check to see if the phone number that is listed in the caller ID exists. In many cases, they could do that without even going all the way beyond the exchange, the first three digits after the area code, because some of these criminals are using totally made-up exchanges. I mean, I have seen phone calls supposedly from 802-147. That doesn't exist. There is no such exchange in Vermont. And in fact, as far as I know, there are no exchanges that start with a number one. But that's not good enough, because the people could be using, as we said, legitimate numbers. And so what I'm proposing is that there be a second layer of checking. If the number is apparently legitimate, the phone switch, before allowing the call to get through, can simply verify that that phone is actually in use. If you get a phone call from, 802-something-something, and it's not busy, then the call is using a fake ID.
So is this – we got a note about this as well from Susan in White River Junction, who says, I've heard of a new technology developed by phone companies called Shaken and Stir that would require all calls to carry an authentic digital signature that ensures the number you see in the caller ID is legitimate. Mm-hmm. Susan wants to know if Vermont's cell and landline carriers are implementing this technology. But this is something that the FCC has been talking about, right? Is this the same thing as what you're talking about, Professor Cabay?
No, that's a different variation. And if it were implemented effectively by the telcos, the telephone companies, I think it would help a great deal. What it means is that what we call a digital signature would be attached to the caller ID. And the only way that the criminals would be able to simulate a legitimate phone number in their caller ID would be basically by pure luck. For example, our telephone number might have an additional code, let's say 379, computed from that number using a secret key associated with our phone. If the criminals don't know that key, They, and it could be a key, by the way, which would include time and date. So it wasn't simply a question of copying 379. The next phone call would say 842, and the one after that would say 008, and so on. That's called a digital signature, and it could be very effective. It would be extremely difficult for the criminals, and notice how strongly I am calling them criminals, to use.
We have some listeners offering solutions or what's working for them. Jacob says simply, just stop answering the phone. Dell says, NoMo Robo software is free and it works perfectly. One ring and they're identified and shut down. Ash says, I literally just block a number as soon as I know it's a robocall. I can block numbers directly from my phone, and I don't appear to have a limit on the amount of numbers I can block. Bobby says, my Pixel 2 phone added a screening feature where the caller is told the call is being screened, asked to say their name, etc., and that has pretty much ended scam robocalls to my cell phone. My landline, however, is another story. And ND Goudreau says, I've been plagued by unwanted calls. In January, I started logging every unwanted call and registering them with donotcall.gov. This seems to have slowed them down a little. I received 54 unwanted calls, 20 that left messages. I did not answer the calls. Most of them came from Vermont, some other states, and one even from Liechtenstein. Let's go to Wade calling in from Danville. Hi, Wade.
Hello.
What's your experience?
I get the calls, and occasionally I'll play along, acting excited or at least interested, and try to chew up as much time as possible. On one occasion, I returned calls incessantly, and I believe I was blocked by them.
And you do that just to waste their time, Wade, just so that, you know, you're sort of taking up their time?
I do, usually when I'm on Wi-Fi, so it's not chewing my data. But yeah, and like I say, on one occasion, I believe they blocked me.
Huh. So thanks for the call, Wade. Mishka Bey, is that an effective strategy if you want to waste their time?
Not necessarily. Many of the robocalls really have no human being on the line at all. Many of the calls have no number you can call back. That is, if you try, you get one of those sounds. This is not a valid number. If you feel like having fun, you can do it. This is called trolling the criminals or trolling the spammer or trolling the spoofer. And I guess if you find that amusing or entertaining, more power to you. Let's hope we can waste some of their time. However, it's not going to stop the criminals who are placing spoofed calls because they work. An occasional nasty, you know, funny caller who is repeatedly calling them is in no way likely to tell the criminals, oh my goodness, I guess we have to stop doing this because somebody is annoyed with us. These are people who are making money on a percentage basis. I think a non-technological approach makes a lot of sense for the time being. Until we get the technology working, I think that our behavior can interfere with the criminals, with the criminals' success rates. I would love to give you some examples.
Please do, yes.
Yeah. One of the issues is, as your previous expert pointed out, never let somebody on the phone put pressure on you. The very fact that someone, for example, a robocall, has a recording that says, but you must act quickly because this offer ends today, that is pretty strong evidence that it's a fraud, just all by itself. Don't fall for that. Another principle for targeted criminal action through the phone, these are actually pinpointing a victim. They're not robocalls now. They're fraudulent. These are people who will research everything they can find out about a person or more likely a family using social media. And then they place the classic call claiming that some family member is in deep trouble and that the victim, the person on the phone, must absolutely send money, usually using, you know, Western Union or a wire transfer. Otherwise, the cousin or the nephew or whatever will be imprisoned in Uganda or Bolivia, something like that. And the way you stop that is you hang up and you call to make contact with the ostensible victim, who will then answer, "Yes, Grandma. You know, I'm fine. How are you?" Don't let people put pressure on you. Another principle, which again was mentioned by the previous speaker, I can be absolutely categorical on this. No government agency will call you on the phone to threaten you, period. That does not happen.
So if you owe back taxes, and you really may owe back taxes, you're not going to get a threatening call that says, "We will take legal action if you do not give us this money immediately."
Absolutely not. The other aspect of that is that if someone actually gets to the point of asking where they're supposed to send the money, the money will not be sent to a government address. It's going to be sent through Western Union to somewhere in Russia or Belarus or Latvia. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. We cannot be fooled by these claims.
About collections agencies? Won't collection agencies call you on the phone?
Well, they could, but you would know whether you yourself, the person being called, would know exactly what was being discussed. You don't get called by a collection agency out of the blue. If someone were to call you, Jane, and say, "We are from Apex Corporation and you owe us $20,000, you would say, "Go away," and hang up the phone.
But Professor Kobe, I mean, aren't they more savvy than that now in a lot of cases too? Yes, I know when the IRS calls, I know my particular financial situation in that case. However, when they call and they say, "Your car is almost out of being under warranty," or "This is your bank." Now, yes, I mean, if you're skeptical and educated on this, you should be saying, "I don't think so." But, you know, a lot of people have a situation and they think, "Oh, this is legitimate," or "Oh, they know." And I mean, there are some really nefarious ones that are over either phone or email that target people and say, "We'll blackmail you because we know you've been doing this or that unsavory thing," because they know that so many Americans are in that position and might say, "I just can't risk it."
Well, let's address the issue of extortion first. Blackmail is a form of extortion, claiming that nefarious behavior will be revealed unless the victim does something particular. You know, in my security classes, I'm very clear with students. You will never kowtow to a blackmailer, ever. And the reason is that once you have done so, they will never stop. A blackmailer is not a nice person. The blackmailer will take advantage of the fact that you agreed to whatever it was they were saying to put you in jeopardy again. The only sensible solution to an attempted blackmail is immediately go to the authorities involved. For example, if you're in a company and they threaten to tell your boss, go tell your boss what has happened and what is happening. And perhaps you can even, if things work out, you could even maybe collaborate with law enforcement authorities to stop these people. But what you do not do, I repeat this, please do not accede to the demands of blackmailers. They will not stop.
Let me read you an email that we got, a note from Mark, who says, "Vermont has an older population. Many scammers view the elderly as easy marks, so it's not surprising Vermonters are fielding more of these calls. Scams dealing with credit cards, Social Security Administration, and other topics are especially designed to target older Vermonters." And on that, let's go to Holly, who's calling in from White River Junction. Hi, Holly. You have thoughts on this, too? Yeah.
Yes. So I have been flooded myself. I have credit card. I've had to order a new credit. The calls come in, they're very professional. But I'm thinking of two people, elderly people. One person receives calls, answers every call, and the name of the person and the phone number is exactly a friend that they knew. So they don't know not to pick it up. But so many of her scam calls had to do with health issues or credit card or something she didn't understand, and she was being polite and staying on the phone. So the other person I'm thinking of is a gentleman who continually gives money and he believes in every call. So I am listening on the station wanting, we need to be more proactive for the seniors as well as the safety of people. I mean, we communicate, so we automatically pick up the phone. Mm. So I'm asking the state to do something more proactive.
Yeah, Holly, thanks for that note, and we'll pass it along to the state. We've seen in the past the Attorney General's office in particular trying to warn Vermonters about these scams as they come in. But Mishka Bey, I mean, what about this targeting in particular of elderly Vermonters?
It's not true.
What's not true? That elderly Vermonters are not being particularly targeted?
That's correct. According to a 2018 report, and I'm looking at the results right here, we see that males aged 18 to 34 were the most susceptible to scams, that college grads were twice as likely to fall victim to a scam as people who had partial or no college education, that parents with children under 18 years old were more likely to be scammed. And then the monetary target, the households with total income above $50,000 and less than $75,000 were least likely to be scammed, whereas the opposite directions had a higher percentage. And out of just, you know, for fun, I can point out that the free vacation is reported or was reported in 2018 as the most commonly received phone trickery.
So why the narrative then? I mean, we hear about, as you mentioned, the one where families are targeted and they might say, Grandma, I'm in Montreal and I've lost my money. I mean, we hear about that one a lot. And we do hear frequently that elderly Vermonters are particularly susceptible, in some part perhaps because the technology is less familiar to them. They're not digital native. So is that just a false narrative or are we seeing something here?
Well, until I see evidence that contradicts what I'm reading here, I am skeptical until, as I say, I see concrete evidence. I do think there may be a problem of reporting. That's my guess as a statistician, which is that some of the younger people conceivably don't talk about having been scammed. Maybe I'm guessing that maybe some of the older people do. They talk to their families and so on. I think all of us should be speaking with all of our friends and relatives and sharing knowledge about basic protection against these criminals. And I think the principles that we articulated a few minutes ago are pretty straightforward. Don't ever respond to demands under pressure. Check to see whether what you're being told is true. And of course, the most famous standard for all resistance to criminal trickery is if it sounds too good to be true, it isn't true.
Right.
That's
that
pretty straightforward.
Yeah. No technology needed for that one. So, Professor Kobe, we just have a minute left, but in terms of bigger action to be taken.
Yeah.
You know, you can block every call that comes in, but as we've talked about, these calls come from a different number every time. Sometimes
That's
it's like the horror movie where it's coming from inside your phone, which you clearly know not to be true.
That's right.
But does there need to be a bigger federal response and state response to this? Because people are just being flooded. And obviously it's working sometimes.
I do think that the FCC in particular has been remiss in insisting that the so-called free market solution, unquote, will solve this problem. They have been ostensibly putting pressure on the phone carriers to deal with the problem. However, the FCC has recently even blocked some of the proposed legislation which would have required phone companies and to act in the ways that we have discussed. So I think writing to the FCC is probably a positive step.
Among the many things that you can do over and over and over again in relation to this particular problem. Mishka Bey is a professor of computer security and information systems at Norwich University. Thanks very much for being on the program.
Always a pleasure.